Morgan, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Call podcast for the first day of another week. Oh, yes, the weeks just keep on coming. It's the 22nd day of July 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for doing all that good stuff. Appreciate the hell out of it. I can't tell you how much I do. Oh, so much going on, so much to talk about, so much sweating this weekend. Holy crap, it was hot. Like 107 is what I saw, not temperature, but air temperature, or not air temperature, but what it feels like if my Apple temperature thing, the weather app, is to be believed. I believed it, because the second you walked out the door, it was just like being hit with a wall of heat. It's like when you open an oven like an idiot going, oh, is this on? Is this preheated? And then that whoosh hits over you, except you couldn't escape it. I stayed in as much as humanly possible this weekend and enjoyed the comforts of a basement and air conditioning and a whole bunch of documentaries on the 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. By the way, just a word on that. I'm sitting at home with the wife Saturday afternoon and the kids are crawling around and crawling all over each other and doing what kids do, pooping themselves and stuff. And I decide, because we're watching this thing that was on the Smithsonian Channel, Apollo's Moonshot. It's like with five parts of it or something like that, an hour each. You skip through the commercials, so you get them in about 35, 40 minutes, because there's a lot of commercials. Fascinating stuff. And then one time, well, I don't know what the wife left the room, so I paused the thing and I thought, we're coming up on like 10, it's sometime between 10:30 and 11 o'clock at night, Eastern time, when Neil Armstrong actually set foot on the moon. That is a monumental human achievement. So who's doing what? There's got to be some kind of commemoration. 50th anniversary of everything is a big deal. So I check the broadcast networks. Nothing. They're not running. You know, they've got some of those news magazine-y things running. Saturday night programming is just kind of an afterthought, apparently, to networks nowadays. I don't usually watch it, but first time in forever, I checked it. And I was like, there's nothing. There was like a 48 hours rerun. Like, CBS couldn't preempt that. There was some kind of other, some woman was murdered by somebody documentary, I think, on NBC. I can't even remember what they were. I just know that they weren't commemorating the 50th anniversary of man walking on the moon for the first time. And I thought, that's weird, because I checked, you know, I scrolled ahead. This was, you know, like 6-7 o'clock when I was doing this. I thought, there's nothing in prime time on any of the four networks to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. The news department couldn't chop together an easy documentary. It's not like this snuck up on anybody. They could have planned this for months, conducted interviews, found archival footage. Lord knows, I could have cobbled together a documentary about this, some kind of news thing, especially since, you know, you have news departments at these networks. So I said, well, cable's got to be better, right? Somebody's got to be doing something. So I checked the cable news channels. Fox, nothing, not interested. MSNBC, rerunning Chris Hayes and their primetime lineup during the week. So people who didn't get all the bile and hatred that they needed during the week and get a nice dose on the weekends, nothing about it. CNN, to their credit, was running their documentary Apollo 11, which, by the way, if you haven't seen it and you have cable, it's on demand, at least on Fios. It's well worth checking out. It is 100% archival footage, but it's not the crappy archival footage that they cleaned it up. And it's done really well. Everybody you hear talking in the documentary it's actual interviews with Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, you name it. It's from the time, and it was very well done. It was released in theaters earlier this year or last year. It's available, you know, you can buy it on iTunes or whatever, but it's for free. At least it was Saturday night, I assume, because we watched, well, I know it was free Saturday night. I assume it still is on CNN's On Demand. So if you haven't seen that yet, it is well worth checking out. But after checking the cable news and the broadcast news, and nobody was doing anything except for CNN running that excellent documentary, I went to the History Channel. They had, no, the Smithsonian, not so much. A couple of, one of them, I can't remember which one it was, if it was Smithsonian or History or American Heroes Channel, had something on the Apollo moon landing that was from 9 to 10. And then at 10 o'clock, it was some sort of weird conspiracy show that had nothing, it wasn't even conspiracies about we didn't go to the moon. It was, I forget what it was about, but it had nothing to do with the moon. I was so disappointed. I scrolled through hundreds of channels and didn't come up with anything. HBO smartly premiered the movie First Man about Neil Armstrong. But other than that, there was nothing. There was no commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. I was shocked. I really was shocked that they wouldn't do anything. This is a massive human achievement. Not to, you know, the 75th anniversary of D-Day was huge coverage, absolutely deserved to be. The History Channels and all the channels that sort of do history went documentary all day long. There was none of that. I don't know what the hell is wrong with our culture these days that you can look at something so phenomenally amazing, such an incredible accomplishment, and go, yeah, but we've got this show about conspiracy theories that we've programmed this for a long time. This is supposed to be their jobs. The History Channel doesn't really show history anymore. It's pawn shops and garbage pickers, but you know, those shows are fine. I just missed the time when the History Channel actually covered, you know, history. It's right there in their name. So I was very shocked and disappointed. Then I thought, why would they do that? Why wouldn't any of these organizations do this? And some of them just don't care. A bunch of people that are in charge, they're not millennials, but they weren't alive during the moon landing or the moon land. We've lost pride in this country in a very serious way. And it's thanks in large part to the left and to a cowering conservatives, cowering Republicans, who are afraid to stand up for this country. Landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to Earth is an incredible accomplishment now, let alone in 1969. We should be celebrating that. We should have incredible amounts of national pride over being the only country to ever do that. Yet we're not allowed to anymore. We're told that that is wrong, that that is fascistic, that that is evil, that that is just selfish. And it was a world accomplishment. It was a species accomplishment. Well, yes, in a sense, it was. But one segment of our species that happens to live in one particular geographic area, the United States of America, were the ones that did it. It's not like France is just on the cusp of getting somebody to the moon. Uganda isn't really about to step it up in their space program. Australia, I love you, you're down under, whatever. You're not about to send an Australian to the moon to throw a shrimp on the Barbie. This was a uniquely American thing. And we're not celebrating it. We didn't celebrate it, at least not the way that it should have been celebrated. It was celebrated down on the National Mall. Friday night, our friend Carrie Pickett came over. Carrie Pickett, you know Carrie Pickett. She hasn't been on this show, but I'm sure you probably know who. She's a reporter. She came over and we packed up the kids. I wasn't super crazy about this, but I'm glad we did it. Packed up the kids, went down to the National Mall. Traffic was heavy. We didn't actually get out of the car because traffic was so heavy and there was just no parking and a bunch of roads were blocked off. But on the Washington Monument, they had just on one side, the side that faces the Capitol building, they had a projection of the Saturn V rocket, the Saturn V rocket that launched Apollo 11. Massive thing. I mean, it's just a projection, so. And at 9:30, 10:30, and 11:30, Friday and Saturday nights, they launched it. And it was animated. It was projected onto the Washington Monument. It's already rocket-shaped. It was very cool. It went through the stages. It broke apart. The sounds were from the original Apollo thing. They did it well. It was put on by the Smithsonian Institution, but that seems to me to be the only place that really kind of commemorated the Smithsonian Institution. I'm sure if you had a science museum in your town, at least I hope that they commemorated the 50th anniversary of Neil Armstrong's One Small Step for Man, but it doesn't seem to me to be as big of a deal as it should have been. It was a massive feat of engineering, of human spirit, of the American spirit, and we're not allowed to really celebrate it because, well, we're Americans and we don't want to be too American-centric. It's wrong. It's cultural imperialism. The Nation magazine, that ridiculous rag, talked about colonialism in the space program. We had two stories last week from the New York Times about how the space program was really just sexist and racist and the Soviet Union was much better than we were. That kind of stupidity is now permeating our culture and dictating what we can celebrate and what we can mark as massive human achievements. The pride of citizenship is being watered down very deliberately because in order to create this utopia world where everybody's free to move, no borders, no world, one world government or some sort of weird one world organization should have. Our rights should be the same rights as everybody else's rights. I want to play a bit of audio for you. It doesn't have anything to do with the moon landing, but it has to do with what I'm talking about. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had a town hall. And in it, she let the cat out of the bag on her feelings about the concept of borders, really. What she says is incredibly disturbing, but not surprising. It shows her naivete, really. She's, you know, dumb to begin with, but she's also not politically savvy. She's new media. She's social media savvy. So in that sense, she's savvy, and sadly, that's kind of all you need, that and identity politics, to get elected in her district. But listen to what she says about who should be able to come here and about the concept. She didn't use the words, but about the concept of borders.
I think migration to me is liberation. It's the ability to move and be. It's the freedom to be, really, is what we're talking about. And I think that all people should be free to be here and in our communities. Because I think that when you start viewing human beings as intrinsically valuable, you feel blessed that they have come to you with their presence. And that's really, I think, the shift that we need to make as a country.
There is no, what is an American? Americans are gross. Everybody's everything. And everybody should be free to be here and in our communities. And so get rid of borders. Open it up, man. What business do you have charging for flights to the United States? If everybody is free to be here, then why should they have to pay to come here? How long until we start sending off progressive recruiters to go and get people to come here? Everybody's free to be in their communities. Migration is liberation. What kind of mindless crap is that? Have you ever heard anything so stupid and simultaneously dangerous? Open up the borders. Come on. Everybody's free to be here because we're not special. We're awful people. This country's racist and we need to import some non-racist people. Show me the country around the world that isn't racist. And I'll show you a place that doesn't exist. But this is the mindset. There's nothing special about this country. There's nothing worth protecting in this country. We have to water it down. We have to dilute it. We have to destroy it so that we can remake it in our image. Everybody should be free to be here. It's liberating migration. So start your 2,000-mile trek up Mexico. Come on in. Don't try to get into her doorman building in Washington, D.C., down by the waterfront, though. She doesn't want you that close. But you should be free to be here. This hippie crap. We should be celebrating the United States. People want to come to the United States. That allows us to do something we should do. Be selective. We should ask this question whether or not the economy is good to the people who want to immigrate to this country. It's a very simple question. What do we get out of it? That should be the only question that matters. It doesn't matter if, oh, you get a smug sense of self-righteousness for letting people in. Then you know what? We're all full up on smug sense of self-righteousness at the moment, but thank you for playing. Try again next year. We'll see what you got. And then somebody comes along and says, I have this set of skills. Not, you know, not in a Liam Neeson in Taken kind of way. It's like, I will find you. No, not that. But you know what? We need engineers or something. And okay, you're an engineer. All right, great. Come on in. You have an education. You have the ability to communicate in our common language. Absolutely. Come on in. And then somebody right behind him, you didn't graduate high school. You are illiterate, not only in your own language, but in ours. I'm sorry, but there is no way humanly possible, aside from a lottery win, that you could ever be a productive member of society. And right now, we're really only interested in productive members of society. So go home and try and learn our language. And then come back and try again. It's pretty simple. The question should always be, what do we get out of it? But to these utopian leftists, it's come one, come all. We're no better than you are. We have no right to keep you out. Please come in. Our country is horribly racist. Sorry about that. But don't worry. We've got all sorts of social programs to make up for it. We're going broke, by the way. But don't worry about that either. You'll be fine. Come on in. The water's fine. It is watching a slow suicide. Listening to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or any member of the Gang of Four, or really any Democrat running for president, and almost any Democrat, is like watching somebody smoke through their tracheotomy hole. It really is. They know that it's destroying them. They just don't care. Now, some people, maybe they just want to die. Some people can't quit or whatever. But it's like watching somebody slowly destroy themselves. It has to stop. It has to be defeated. We need some national pride. And I know the left immediately clutches their own nationalism. America first. Oh, and you're white while you're saying that. So that's white nationalism. I've not mentioned race at all. I've mentioned the United States of America. And the United States of America is literally the rainbow. We used to be a melting pot. The Democrats have turned us into a series of chafing dishes where you shouldn't identify with your fellow countrymen. You should identify with your fellow humans, really, of the same ethnicity. So if you're Hispanic and living in Montana, something being done to somebody who is also Hispanic down on the southern border, somebody who's trying to break into the law, into the country, should bother you. You should want them in this country because they look like you. You should have a kinship with them. It's kind of how the Klan used to work. Oh, we're for white people. Now, how about you just be for good people? How about you go to hell, Klansmen? How about you go to hell, Nation of Islam? How about you go to hell, Democratic Racist Party? And let people be people and judge people not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. They sure quote the hell out of Martin Luther King, except that line. It's weird. We should be proud to be Americans, no matter what your skin color, no matter what flavor of human being you are. But we have and are being systematically stripped of that by this leftist mentality that you shouldn't. This country is awful. You hear it every day from Democrats, be they running for president, be they the Speaker of the House, the minority leader in the United States Senate. Think of it this way, and I've probably made this analogy recently. I know I made it on the radio last week. Imagine talking about your spouse or significant other in the terms that the Democrats talk about this country. It's horrible. It's a racist country. I mean, you're obviously not going to sit there and say you're horrible and you're racist. But, you know, you come home and there's your wife in the kitchen. And, you know, she's put on some weight. She's, I don't know, she hadn't done her hair in a while. She's comfortable, dressed comfortably because it's hot out. And you come in and say, geez, honey, you gotten fat and your hair's a mess and your breath stinks. And, wow, you need to wash your face. You got some zits coming in. And if that's all you said to them, just constantly, every day you saw them, you're not looking good, you smell like crap, I don't know, this house, you keep it a mess, but I love you. If you follow it up, I love you. How long do you think that she's going to sit there and go, well, at least they love me? No, they're not going to believe that. Why? Because that's not how you treat somebody you love. If you listen to what the Democrats say about this country, that's not how you talk about something that you love. I love you, honey, but I just want to fundamentally transform you. What? Yeah, I want to make you a 5'10", 110-pound model with blonde hair down to your waist and big breasts and, you know, just incredibly smooth. I want you to look airbrushed all the time, but I love you. Don't think that I don't love you because of this. If you just sit and watch porn all day and you say, honey, but I love you, there's probably going to be some problems in your marriage. But the Democrats talk that way about this country constantly. It's racist. It's sexist. It's run by the rich. It's exploiting the poor. Oh, my God. We're destroying the planet. We're responsible for everything that's wrong in the world and that's wrong in this country. Horrible. And they want to replace you. Why would you want more people to come into this horrible, racist country that is fundamentally racist, founded on racism? They're trying to tear it down so that they can rebuild it. People don't voluntarily go to radical left-wing socialist, fascist, communist ideologies. They have to be riled up. They have to be afraid of something or they have to be angry at something. In Nazi Germany, they were in economic turmoil after World War I. The treaty that ended World War I was a horribly negotiated treaty. The Allies imposed all kinds of economic punishments on Germany because they were arrogant, and it destroyed the German economy. That gave Hitler an opening. He blamed everybody and everything, mostly Jews, but he got a piece of blame for everybody who wasn't him in there. And people looking for someone to blame, went along with it. This is great. It's not very often that people voluntarily go and vote. Yes, the UK, they went socialist, mostly socialist, largely socialist, socialized medicine. They embraced socialism after World War II, after 7 years of bombings and death and destruction. They decided they wanted to go in a different way. It was an easier sell. Everything was destroyed, and you've got people offering them utopia. France, after World War II, almost embraced communism. Were it not for the Marshall Plan, likely would have fallen into the hands of the communists. Why? Because they were in ruins. They were in desperate straits to try and find something to cling on to, some way to improve their lot in life. Desperate people are the people who embrace radical left political ideas. Democrat strongholds across this country are desperate places. Now, there are two segments of that. The desperate, the put upon, the poor, the oppressed, who are their immediate political leaders, by the way, are almost universally Democrats. And then the bourgeoisie, the wealthy, the leader class, the people who are the progressives who believe that they're better than everybody else, they know better than everybody else, and they should be leading everybody else. Look at these great unwashed. They barely graduated high school. They can't make decisions for themselves about health care. I tell you what, I'll make the decisions for them. I'll do a better job than they could ever do for themselves, so I will empower the federal government to decide what the minimum insurance can legally look like. And they'll buy it, and they'll love it, and they'll love me for it. And then, of course, we saw what happened with Obamacare. It's been a disaster. People hate it. People are paying significantly more than they were ever promised, and they used to by a lot. Most people's premiums have more than doubled. They more than doubled in the first 5 years of Obamacare. It doesn't matter. They're better off. They're too stupid to realize how good they have it. You got Bernie Sanders out there running for president of the United States saying, yeah, I'm going to raise your taxes. But don't worry, you don't have to pay premiums anymore. Okay, so if you're paying 20% of your premiums in pre-tax dollars, you're getting a tax benefit there, well, just ballpark it and make up a number. Say you're really only paying 10% of your pay for your premiums. How much does your taxes have to go up to not only make that up, your 10%, but the 90% that your employer it was contributing, or the 20 or 80% that your employer was contributing, then you could say, well, that'll kind of be a wash. It won't really, in the long run, it'll be a wash for you. Okay, well, then what do you do about the, 50 million people on Medicare and or uninsured, or Medicaid and or uninsured? Where does that money come from? Those people. So we're told there are 30 million people uninsured in this country. So it's probably more like 70 million with Medicaid and uninsured. Your taxes have to go up not only to make up what you're getting, which could theoretically, not really, but theoretically could be a wash. Somebody's got to pay for those tens of millions of people who don't have the money to pay for anything, who are already on the public dole or not participating in the system for whatever reason. Suddenly, your taxes have to go up significantly more because you're not covering your own nut. You're covering everybody else's as well. Then it starts to look a little bit different, doesn't it? But Bernie never makes that argument, and no journalist ever has the wherewithal to ask a question like that. So it's not, going to be a wash for you when you've got 50 to 70 million free riders, essentially, coming into a program. And when you're promising them that everything they want from the top of their head to the bottom of their feet is going to be covered as long as it's not cosmetic, you're talking about real, real costs. So maybe if it's a wash for the individual as far as their taxes and their premiums that they're paying now, maybe people would go for that. Maybe people would be suckered into that. But that's not anywhere near what it actually will be, because it can't be. There are far too many people already on the program for the poor or not involved in insurance at all who are going to have somebody pick up their slack. There aren't enough rich people in the country. So guess where that's going to fall? So while Bernie gets kudos for saying that he's going to raise taxes on the middle class, he gets a big fat middle finger for lying to people saying it'll pretty much be a wash for you. Because mathematically, it can't be. It's impossible. So what's the purpose of that? You destroy the country. You damage the economy. We're almost $23 trillion in debt. You're going to fundamentally transform somebody whose life who's happy? No. Somebody who's miserable. Nobody who's happy and well-adjusted goes to something as ostentatious and narcissistic as a life coach, for example. It's people who are miserable, who also have money, who go to somebody as a life coach or whatever, you know, tell me what to do. How do I do this? Well, first thing you got to do is get comfortable enough with yourself to recognize that you don't need a freaking life coach. There you go. There's your first and only lesson. Grow up. Be an adult. Make decisions. Think rationally. Don't act emotionally. Don't get overwhelmed and start breaking down and crying. Don't be a baby. Be an adult. What a novel, crazy idea. We, of course, have the freedom in this country and the luxury in this country to have people like that. Because we are the richest country in the history of the world, and we act as though we don't deserve it. We absolutely 100% deserve it. My God, 50 years ago, with technology, you needed a building to house that would just do basic math. We sent people to the moon, and we brought them back. And now we're not allowed to celebrate that. Now we've got to have open borders. Now there's nothing special about being an American. 50 years of liberalism has brought us to this point. We've got to turn back. Or we're screwed. We're just absolutely screwed going forward. Speaking of being screwed, we have a word from our sponsor and my former employer and my friends at Americans for Tax Reform. When President Trump says,
America will never be a socialist country.
He couldn't be more right. That's why it's so troubling that a proposal from the Department of Health and Human Services would move us in that direction. The International Drug Pricing Index would adopt socialist price controls set by foreign countries. Today, Americans get access to cutting-edge therapies for diseases like cancer nearly 2 years before other countries. I talk about it regularly on the show. And the future holds incredible promise for fighting diseases like Alzheimer's and MS. The HHS proposal would cripple America's world-leading medical innovation. We would have fewer new cures, and they'd be harder to obtain. We should control costs with market reforms by fostering competition and by making other countries pay their fair share, not with socialist price controls here. Keep America great by keeping American medical innovation great. Visit protectmypartb.org. That's protectmypartb.org. You know, I had no intention of starting the show like this. I was literally just going to mention in passing the Apollo 11 and lack of celebration, lack of pride that was portrayed in our popular culture on cable television. But I just went off on a rant there, but it really is something that sticks in my craw. I want to get to this ridiculous situation down in Georgia, the cries of racism that suddenly, when confronted with facts, it's Democrat-on-Democrat violence. It's kind of funny in that sense, but it's really sad what our country is becoming. But I want to talk a little bit about Cory Booker, because Cory Booker is not doing well. And you can take that however you want. But Cory Booker is not doing well when he's coming for president and running for president. He's polling below or right around what Marianne Williamson is polling. I mean, there's just no way that you should be tied or even in the same vicinity. You should be double digits away from the woman who will tell you to get crystals and who is Oprah's guru. But that's where Cory Booker is. Spartacus. He's not doing Spartacus. What's going on, Spartacus? Over the weekend, he appeared on, I believe it was CNN. And he was asked about comments he'd made in the past about the possibility that he'd be open to meeting with Louis Farrakhan. Listen to this exchange with the CNN anchor and the lack of curiosity. This is how it is to be a Democrat these days. I'd say running for president. It doesn't matter. If you have that D after your name, it's actually a shield. It's not a letter. And it protects you from real questions, real follow-up, or any skepticism whatsoever on behalf of the so-called journalist there asking you these things. She sets it up well and listens to his response and accepts it verbatim. And then we'll play you the original afterwards. Well, you know what? I'll play you the original first. This was about a month ago at a town hall meeting. A guy stands up. The audio is kind of weird. It was camera phone audio, but I've tried to clean it up as best I could. I have not edited it and any changed anything in it in any way, shape, or form. I just increased the volume in some places because it's really kind of weird. This guy, the way he talks about would he meet with Louis Farrakhan, and he was unambiguous. He asks if he would take an audience with Louis Farrakhan, like, oh my God, you've got to go in. Do not make eye contact with Louis Farrakhan. You're not allowed to turn your back on Louis Farrakhan. Speak to Louis Farrakhan only when spoken to. You'll have an audience with Louis Farrakhan for as long as Louis Farrakhan wants that audience and not a second longer. That's how he talks about it. And listen to Cory Booker's response. Rather than vomit uncontrollably, he's trying to win friends and influence. I don't know if Cory Booker actually believes in anything, to be perfectly honest with you. And it comes across in this clip as the ultimate in pandering. Like, oh, yeah, he's clearly the person, anybody who says, would you accept an audience with Louis Farrakhan, is an acolyte of Louis Farrakhan. Probably not a big fan of Whitey. Definitely not a big fan of the Jews. But I just want to play this for you first so you have the full context to listen to his answer. But listen to how Cory Booker seems down with meeting him.
I am.
My question was, would you be willing to have an audience with him concerning that subject matter?
You know, I live in Newark, so we have famous Mosque 25. We have Nation of Islam there. As mayor, I met with lots of folks. I've heard Minister Farrakhan's speeches for a lot of my life. So I don't feel like I need to do that, but I'm not one of these people that says I wouldn't sit down with anybody to hear what they have to say. But I live on a neighborhood where I'm getting guys on the streets offering and selling his works. I'm very familiar with Minister Louis Farrakhan and his beliefs.
There you have it. That was the entirety of the exchange. So now you have the complete and total context. I know it sounded a little weird, but that's what happens sometimes. But he's, I don't know that I need to, but I'm willing to sit down with anybody. I know his work. I'm very familiar with it. I get the final call in my neighborhood. Got Moss there. It's all good. So then yesterday on CNN, in a conversation, in a conversation with Dana Bash on CNN, this comes up and she asks him about it. Like, hey, you still willing to meet with Louis Farrakhan? And Cory Booker's story changes dramatically. And he claims that the quote that she reads to him is out of context. Now you have the whole thing, so you know the context. Listen to the new cut from yesterday.
I want to ask about something that you were recently asked, and that is about whether or not you would meet with Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. He's unabashedly anti-Semitic. He said, quote, I don't feel like I need to do that, but I'm not one of those people who says that I wouldn't sit down with anybody to hear what they have to say. Is that still where you are?
Well, first of all, that is completely taking out of context that larger conversation.
Okay, give me the context.
I will not sit down with Louis Farrakhan, period. And I reject anybody who preaches that kind of bigotry and hate towards other Americans.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up.
Thank you for clearing that up. And that was it. Dana Bash moved on. Thank you for clearing that up. Now, CNN is a massive organization with incredible resources at their disposal. They also have that video that I took the audio from at their disposal. I'm just a guy who knows one software program that cleans up audio a little bit. And that was the best I could do it. CNN could undoubtedly clean up that audio significantly better than I could. And they also have the added advantage of they could have put the words on the screen. You know, they could have done the closed captioning thing that you do when the audio isn't all that good. That's a benefit that television has over podcasting and radio. Dana Bash could have played the clip rather than read part of what Cory Booker said. Instead, she just says, oh, okay, what's the context? The whole clip is like 30 seconds, so you don't need a whole lot of setup. Could have played it. And at the end, rather than pointing out, you know, you kind of seemed open to it. It was unambiguous. She just goes, well, thank you for clearing that up. There would have been another question I could have thought of, but I'm not a highly paid journalistic professional like Dana Bash. I could have said, in what context is what you said good? You know, what context would you put that in to make that shiny and new, to make that sound like you're not willing to meet with an anti-Semite and a racist? They always leave out, leftists always leave out the racist part. It's always amazing to me. Like, yes, Louis Farrakhan is an unabashed anti-Semite. No question about it whatsoever. He also hates white people, which normally, to a normal human being, would also be a problem. But to Democrats, that's not a problem. Look, everybody hates white people. You're allowed to hate white people. So that Dana Bash just kind of lets that slide. She doesn't care, because the left has this perverted new definition of what a racist is, and what racism is. It has to be prejudice plus power. And since Whitey has all the power, only Whitey can be a racist. Everybody, oh, you can be a little bit prejudiced. What are you going to do? Prejudice, prejudice, prejudice. But it's not racism. It's this sort of garbage that the left tries to indoctrinate people to. You see college students make this argument constantly. Now, why would they make this argument? Because it absolves them. Why would people be susceptible to this argument? Because if you're predisposed to hate somebody based on their skin color, you're probably not feeling super good about yourself. So the left found a way to absolve people of that. Well, at least non-white people of that. Saying, no, you don't worry. You can't be racist. You know, you've been oppressed. You don't have the power to impose your beliefs. And your beliefs, by the way, are completely justified. So don't worry. You're not racist. That's asinine. It's stupid. But it works, because people don't want to think of themselves as bad people. So you absolve them of it. People who are bad people should think of themselves as bad people. We should think of them as bad people. And that helps them change, because nobody really wants, and most people don't really want to be a bad person. So they go, okay, well, I really got to stop that bad behavior. I'm a bad person. I don't want to be a bad person. But no, Dana Bash just says, well, thank you for clearing that up. He didn't clear anything up. He just denies. There's a bigger context there. Okay, well, I played you the whole thing. What context does what he said now make any sense or sound anything remotely close to what he's trying to convey there? He was caught, or he would have been caught, if Dana Bash were a serious journalist. But she's not a serious journalist, so Cory Booker was in a safe space. There wasn't going to be any follow-ups. So what are you going to do? This story this happened, I guess it was last Thursday or Friday. It's kind of funny. The Bernie Sanders campaign is unionized. The idea of a campaign being unionized is ridiculous. Campaigns are temporary work. You don't work on a campaign because you need a job. You, at least you shouldn't. If you do, your campaign is not going to win. If the campaign is populated with people who are just there to hammer a paycheck, they are not going to win. You need people working on a campaign who believe in the candidate, believe in the causes of the candidate, and are really willing to work themselves dead tired for that candidate in order to win. Well, Bernie Sanders' campaign isn't that kind of campaign. That's kind of why Bernie Sanders is different now than he was in 2016. It was all true believers before. Now it's opportunists. People who want to jump on the Bernie train because they think it's heading to the White House, or jumped on the Bernie train because they thought it was having a good chance of heading to the White House. They're in for a rude awakening, by the way, but that's a tale for another time. So the union was mad last week, because some people were working upwards of 60 hours a week on the campaign, and their salaries, if they did the math, put their pay, because your salary, you don't get you know, if you're on salary, you generally don't get overtime. Their salaries, when you did the math, that broke it down to about $13 an hour. And Bernie is a big advocate for $15 an hour being the minimum wage, the livable wage, blah, 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 blah. So they were grousing to the media about how they're working so hard and they're not getting paid enough per hour. Again, I have volunteered on campaigns. I have done a lot of work on campaigns. When I was working in the Senate, I took vacation to go out to Montana. Hell, I seem to recall living in Montana for 3 weeks, living in a place in Missoula. I was glad I was in Missoula. Missoula is really nice, and it's a college town. I'm a young guy. I was a single guy. And, yeah, single guy in a college town. It's nice, especially when I was the boss. I knew all the young Republicans out there. And I was out there for about 3 weeks. I didn't get paid at all. I was volunteering my time. Didn't have to. I wanted to. My expenses were paid, so there was that. But I wasn't out there getting paid. I worked, I got up about 7, and I didn't get back most nights till 10. It was a long, long 3 weeks. And occasionally I would do some things that were actually my job related. So I did those, but it busted our asses for that campaign because we believed in our boss. And all the volunteers busted their asses for that campaign. And their pay was fast food. You know, I'd go out at lunch and I'd, you know, go to Taco Bell or McDonald's or whatever local restaurants they had. And I'd bring back a pile of food. Here you go. You'd eat at your desk. Go out, grab dinner, bucket of KFC or something. Here you go. Back at your desk eating. Now, people were free to come and go whenever they wanted. I was all over the... I was between Missoula and Idaho, pretty much. I can't remember the name of the mountain range or valley or whatever the hell it was, but it was beautiful, beautiful out there. The eastern side of the state is flat. I was glad I wasn't stuck out in the east, but we busted our asses. I never sat down and calculated how much I'm not being paid for this work, how much I'm being screwed for this. I was on vacation, so I was technically being paid. I'd saved up my vacation time for this. But the people who were on the campaign, who were actually campaign staff and being paid, they were not paid. They were paid next to nothing per hour. You do it because you believe in what you're doing. And now the Bernie people are grousing. And so guess what happens? And this is kind of telling. It's kind of funny, too. Bernie Sanders is now limiting the hours of his campaign workers. Instead of paying them more, he's limiting their hours. How funny is that? Okay, well, we'll get it down to just to have work a few hours. Because Bernie can't overcome this. He can't ignore this or he's a raging hypocrite. He can't pay them more because he would be wasting money. He can't pay them overtime because he'll be wasting money that he needs to spend on advertising, on hiring more staff, on traveling around the country trying to meet voters. So he's taking his staff and he's cutting their hours. See the irony there? When they call for a $15 minimum wage in fast food businesses and fast food, what always happens in these cities, these liberal cities that raise their minimum wage to $15 an hour? People lose jobs. People get their hours cut. People start to complain. Oh, well, yeah, I'm paid more per hour now, but now I'm getting less hours. See how that works? That's a campaign, so it's slightly different. It's going to hurt Bernie in the long run. But Bernie, for the first time in his 74 years or however long he is, he's finally learning what it's like to run a business. He's never had to do that before. He's never had to live within a budget. He's never had to worry about anything remotely close to what it's like to running a business. And now that his campaign is unionized and they're grousing about, oh, we need more money. We got to have this. We got to have that. Suddenly he cares. And instead of opening up the wallet more, like he expects business owners to do, he's cutting hours. So it works out that they're making $15 an hour. Ha, 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 ha. You can't make this stuff up, folks. Nobody would believe you. But this is, every once in a while, reality smacks a Democrat across the face like a dead fish. And this is one of those moments. Savor it. Savor it. It's beautiful. Another moment worth savoring was a bit of a hot Democrat on Democrat accusatory racist action that happened in Georgia over the weekend. It made the rounds on social media so fast, you wouldn't even believe it. State Representative Erica Thomas who happens to be black, was the victim of a Trump-inspired hate crime at a Publix grocery store. Oh, man, it was awful. She went home and she made a tearful video after being told to go back where she came from by a white, racist, piece of garbage Donald Trump supporter. Oh, it just had all the makings of everything a liberal could possibly want. The only problem is, after her video went viral, the local media picked up on it and found the guy that she was accusing that she had a confrontation with in the express lane. Her story went from she had 15 items in a 10 items or less line to she had 20 items in a 10 items or less line. And this guy was cursing her out and telling her to go back. Blah, blah, blah. It's all that chant. It was very fashionable. It was very Jussie Smollett-like, if you will. See, Jussie Smollett got into trouble because he concocted the perfect scenario that if you had access to the box of parts, you would just throw, they were white, they were wearing Make America Great Again hats, they put a noose around his neck, they poured bleach on him, they said this is Trump country, everything, all in one case, a microcosm of every liberal fever dream, all in one event, and it turned out to be a complete fraud. Well, it looks like this could end up being the exact same way, but let's start at the beginning, shall we? Congresswoman Thomas goes home after shopping at the grocery store. She's 9 months pregnant. She says she can't stand for very long, although she managed to stand for a very long time for interviews with the local media. It was weird. She can't be on her feet very long, but when there's cameras there, somehow it works out. But that's neither here nor there. We'll get there. Let's listen to her original tearful explanation as to the horrible racism that she was confronted with at the grocery store.
So you know what I decided? I decided to go live because I'm very upset because people are getting really out of control with this white privilege stuff. I'm at the grocery store and I'm in the 10 aisle, the aisle that says 10 items or less. Yes, I have 15 items, but I'm 9 months pregnant and I can't stand up for long. And this white man comes up to me and says, "You lazy son of a bitch." He says, "You lazy son of a bitch. You need to go back where you came from." And he says that. I said, "Sir, you don't even know me. I'm not lazy. I'm 9 months pregnant." He says, "You're ignorant.
White privilege, and you got to go back to where you came from." Oh, man, it was ready-made for national media. And the media got involved. The New York Times ran a story on this. The Washington Post, you name the rag, and they ran with this. Turns out, though, the man that she had this interaction with, whatever it was, is not white. He's Cubano. He's Cuban. He's also a raging liberal Democrat, but more on that in a second. Listen to more of her tearful video, blaming everybody and everything under the sun, and tying it all back eventually to politics and the president.
And I'm just sorry, y'all. I don't ever come on like this, but I said, people need to see the hate that is going on in this country. The hate is real. And for that white man to come up to me and call me a son of a bitch and lazy and go back where I came from because he had a couple items and he wanted to get in front of me. And he said I had 20 items in a 10 item line. What would make you that angry to yell at somebody like that? And he just kept going on and on until the Publix lady had to grab him, tell him, please leave. He just still kept going on and on. And I was scared to leave there because I thought he was going to follow me to my car, take out a gun. You just never know. But it just hurt me so bad, y'all. And I'm tough. You know what I'm saying? I'm a state rep. I fight for other people. I'm tough. But when you're in a situation and somebody tells you, you son of a bitch, you're ignorant, go back home where you came from. And I'm thinking, like, I'm from America.
Every newsroom across the country was drooling about this was too good to pass up. It's also too good to be true. She continues in her tearful video. She could replace Jussie Smollett on Empire because she can act. Because later on, she tells a different story. But she's very, very upset. And, of course, she has to blame this on Donald Trump.
Oh, sorry. I don't usually cry, but I just had to tell everybody what's going on in this world. It's real. And I know y'all see Ilhan Omar. And y'all see all this stuff about send her back and stuff like that. But it's getting out of control. And he's inciting so much hate.
He's inciting so much hate. Ilhan Omar, go back. Yeah, she's talking about Donald Trump there. And as if to put a finer point on it, she in this video on Facebook was wearing an I Stand With Planned Parenthood t-shirt, which she then references just to make it the perfect trifecta. White guy, Donald Trump blamed it, said the same thing Trump said, and it's Planned Parenthood. That's probably what set him off. No, it has to be some privileged white guy who's anti-abortion who just accosts this poor, sweet, nourishing woman in a grocery store.
People need to see that the hate is real out here and people are standing around watching people being hated on. And everybody can see that I am 9 months pregnant. He probably saw my Planned Parenthood shirt on. He probably saw my Planned Parenthood shirt on. That probably made him even madder.
He probably saw my Planned Parenthood shirt on, and that probably made him even madder. You know, those white men and their privilege, and they're just white this and privilege that and conservative this and conservative that. Well, the local news media came out. Let's listen to a little bit of that local news report just to get that flavor, shall we?
This woman, Ms. Thomas, is playing the victim for political purposes because she's a state legislator. I am a Democrat, number one.
I asked Representative Thomas if Sparks used the exact wording, go back to where you came from.
I don't want to say he said go back to your country or go back to where he came from, but he was making those types of references is what I remember.
Sparks went on to tell us that he is Cuban, that he does not support President Trump, and that he is not racist. Now, Cobb County Police say they're investigating. Publix says they're working with law enforcement. I did ask if they plan to release the surveillance video or if they would comment on what exactly was said or what happened. They did not answer that.
So clearly there was some interaction between these two people, Mr. Sparks, Eric Sparks, and Congresswoman Erica Thomas. But what was it? She immediately drew a whole bunch of conclusions, said that he told me to go back to where I came from. Now she's kind of hemming and hawing and walking that back. What is that? Was it go back to where you came from or was it not go back to where you came from? Was it your Planned Parenthood shirt that set off this activist Democrat? Could that possibly be? It's highly unlikely. Once somebody looks into this story, well, it turns out that Mr. Sparks has some social media. And he has a long history of writing things like attacks against Trump. Trump needs to go back to Germany and his Nazi roots, Eric Sparks wrote on July 14th. The four progressives included Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, blah, blah, blah. He lists all their names off. The women were all born in the United States except for Omar, who became a refugee in 1991 when a brutal civil war devastated Somalia, a predominantly Muslim country in East Africa. Trump needs to go back to Germany and his Nazi roots. That's Eric Sparks, this so-called racist, pro-life, conservative, white, privileged guy from Cuba. What? So the local news crew that was dispatched did a little bit longer of an interview. They did a longer interview. The audio is not great on this, but this is the raw footage of their interview with Congresswoman Thomas after it was after the wheels started coming off her story, shall we say. She changes her tune a little bit. And by the way, she's able to stand up. You know, in the original video on her Facebook, she was a victim. She was shocked. She didn't know what to say. She didn't respond at all. Now that the story's changing a little bit, the reality around it, not a white guy, not a conservative, but an activist Democrat who hates the president of the United States, who happens to be Hispanic, her story changes a little too. Remember, she said she couldn't stand up for very long. She managed to stand up for quite a long time during this interview and the subsequent confrontation with Mr. Sparks. But let's just listen to her suddenly become a little bit stronger and a little bit more of a hero of her own story.
What were his exact words as far as go back to where you came from? He said those exact words.
Well, like I said, I mean, like I know what I don't know what he said. He said go back, you know, those types of words. I don't want to say he said go back to your country or go back to where he came from, but he was making those types of references, is what I remember.
You just don't remember the exact phrase.
No, definitely not. But I know it was go back because I know I told him go back because I know after he told me, I said you go back, and I said go. So.
Suddenly, after originally being frozen and taken aback by the comments, maybe he didn't say those comments now. Yeah, maybe it wasn't go back, it was something or whatever. Maybe it was ow my back, because I told him to go. So you were able to confront him or you weren't able to confront him, Congresswoman or Representative Thomas. Which is it? The truth doesn't change, yet your story has changed significantly. It's weird how that works out. I'm not sure why the police were involved, but if the police are involved now, there is such a thing as filing a false police report. Although after the Jussie Smollett hoax, I'm not sure that's a crime anymore either. But it was it was, of course, Ted Lieu, Congressman Ted Lieu, Democratic candidates. These elected Democrats jumped on this immediately. This is Trump's America. This is what you get in Trump's America. And, now the story's changing. Maybe this is really what you get in Trump's America. A whole bunch of lying liberals saying the sky is falling, crying wolf. And then when confronted with reality, the story changes ever so slightly and fades from public consciousness. Weird how that happens, isn't it? We'll keep an eye on this story and everything else. Thank you for listening. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. If you want to enter to win the signed copy of the Carrie Severino, Molly Hemingway book, signed by both of them, email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com. Whatever else you got, send it that way, too. And be back here tomorrow for another exciting episode. Thanks for listening.
He probably saw my Planned Parenthood shirt on. That probably made him even madder.